Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today as we visit with Melinda Myers on the phone with us, nationally known gardening expert, TV and radio host. She's an author and columnist, 30 years of horticulture experience, and she's written over 20 gardening books. She will be at the PBS Wisconsin Garden and Landscape Expo this weekend in Madison. In fact, I think she's there right now. We have 12 pairs of tickets to give away to the first 12 people who call with questions for Melinda. So, if you want to call us, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Melinda, welcome back.
It's always great to chat with you, Larry, and Garden Expo is kind of the precursor of spring. So even if it doesn't always feel like it outside, you walk into that expo and the fragrance, the flowers, the energy that gardeners have when you put them in one big room is great, isn't it?
I love Garden Expo. It's so much fun. And you're right. I mean, it can be lousy outside, but in there, it's spring.
It is. And this year we have great weather. So if you're driving, you know, you're coming in, the roads are clear, the sun is shining. So you can't do anything outside. You might as well go in and get ready for this coming spring.
Yeah. And if you have a question for Melinda, by the way, as you're listening here, first 12 people with a question are going to get a pair of tickets if they want it. So what could be better than that?
Exactly. And I know you guys are, you're there too with, I think, Brian and Lisa and Jill this weekend. And
yeah, 9:30 Saturday morning. We will be talking and taking questions. We'll kind of run almost a garden talk, except we'll be there in person. And we'll have some slides, and I'll be giving away fabulous gifts and drawings. We've got some gardening books and so forth. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it does sound like it. So, yeah. And I have a booth I just wanted to mention, too. So hopefully people will join me for my seminars. I have one each day. But I'm in booth 736 whenever I'm not speaking and there to answer questions and give away goodies. I'm not above bribing to get people to come talk to me. I have seeds from American Transmission Company and trowels from Digger's Hotline. And, of course, Milorganite fertilizer. Never go without it. And some other goodies. So I hope people will stop by. And lots of educational information, of course.
I'm gonna have to stop by and say hi.
I know. I'll have to give you fill up your bag.
Well, you know, here we've got next Friday. You know what next Friday is?
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day. And there are plenty of plants and flowers given out, I think, next Friday, don't you?
Oh, definitely. And I just want to put a plug in for all the gardeners out there. We do like to get plants and flowers as well. I always feel like I have to let my significant other know that it's okay to give me flowers. I like to get flowers.
Oh, well, what suggestions do you have for great Valentine plants? Or flowers.
And plants are great. If you've got a person that loves to grow and tend, plants are wonderful. One of my favorite is Anthurium. It's got kind of that funky little heart-shaped platform of a leaf that's red, pink, or white. Little spadix coming out, a little kind of knob coming out. I've had the flowers last, this plant flower, for a whole year.
Huh.
It's drought tolerant. Sometimes you'll see them mounted onto lava rock because they can survive kind of much like an orchid can, or planted in potting mix. And it's just a fun plant because it keeps giving. It's low maintenance, very forgiving. If you, you know, if your Valentine is an underwaterer, perfect gift for them. Orchids are a favorite any time of the year, and they're so reasonably priced. Such a long-living, you know, three months of flowers, right?
Yeah.
And if you like the challenge, if your Valentine is a gardener, you know, we don't ever give up, you can get them to rebloom fairly easily. You know, leave the stem intact, and you'll get a few more flowers come, you know, in a few months. Cut it back halfway, about two or three nodes above the soil. It'll send out a new flower stem, or cut it back just above the leaves, and in a year you'll get a big dynamic flower spike. And if your Valentine's doesn't like a challenge, some gardener will take that off their hands to rebloom it, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I was thinking about cut flowers too as you were talking. I'm thinking, you know, there's so many directions and so forth about how to make those cut flowers last, but really give us the inside dope. What's the best?
You know, fresh water and a clean vase, and cut the stems before you put them in. So when you receive or give the bouquet, help your Valentine, recut the stems. The reason we do it on a slant is just so that it doesn't seal with the bottom of the vase. You know, it's the same amount of surface area to absorb water, but more is exposed. A fresh cut, removing the lower leaves, that's a great idea because that's where a lot of the bacteria can grow. So you pull the leaves off that will be submerged in water. Use that floral preservative. That's a great idea. And then changing the water every 2 to 3 days. It should be nice and clear. So when it starts getting cloudy, it's time to change the water, perhaps recut the stems, put in a little more preservative, clean the vase if needed. And one of the things I like to do is some flowers, like carnations and alstroemerias, last a long time. Some don't last as long. So I'll pull out those as they fade. So my arrangement changes over time, but I have fresh flowers, and they last longer because I get rid of those that are declining, so it still looks good, and I get the maximum enjoyment out of my cut flowers.
Yeah. You know, roses are kind of popular for a cut, and they are subject to drooping.
You bet. And sometimes it's how they've been managed. You know, they get transported across the country, across the continent. You know, they may have gone dry. You know, there's a lot of things in the way, and there's nothing more disturbing than giving, right, a bouquet, and you watch those necks just droop. A professional florist gave me this tip, and I've used it and shared it for years. Basically, what you do if that stem is drooping, cut the bottom of the stem, submerge the whole thing, flower, stem, leaves, and all, in warm, in like tepid water, you know, in your tub or sink or a tub, and then do that for 30 minutes. Recut the stem and put it in fresh water in a clean vase, and it will perk up and last for another week. And I've done this repeatedly because I've had times where just a few of the flowers not off, or sometimes more than you'd like to admit. And roses, especially Valentine's Day, are a little pricey, so you want to make sure you get the best value from that.
Well, very good tips. We have lots of callers online with questions for you, Melinda, so I think we should go to the phones.
That sounds great.
Let's do it. Zach in Bayview, your turn. Hi, Zach.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I need to move my garden this year to a new location, and I was wondering how I should handle moving asparagus. Should I do it, like, soon, or should I wait till it's all done?
You know, I've moved asparagus twice in my life, and that was two times too many.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
So I admire you, but I'm, you know, as gardeners, we take those challenges on. If you can move them as they're sprouting and get them reestablished so that you have the summer to tend and get them reestablished, you know, if you planted it, those roots are deep, a good 6 or 8 inches deep. And so you're going to want to lift them. You're going to not want to harvest next year, even though those are mature crowns. You want to let that plant recover. And then the other thing you may decide is, if the plants are healthy and very productive or they're sentimental, yeah, you definitely want to move them. If they're okay, you may want to look at this as a chance to bring in some new things like Jersey Giant that's more disease resistant, stouter stems, you know, a little more productive. But
that's what I do.
Yeah. It sounds like you've dug up asparagus, too.
I've tried. This did not work for me.
It is hard. I've had success, but it is hard, and it's not 100%. And so what you may want to do, if you want to keep it, see what comes up and then supplement with new plants as needed, too. But it might be easier just to invest in some new plants. But I've moved it too, Zach, so I know, I understand why you'd want to do it.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Zach. Well, Linda in Lake Geneva up next. Hi, Linda.
Hello, and thank you for this program. We have a garden on the north shore of Lake Geneva, right close to the lake. And for the past two summers, with all the rain, it's been underwater a good part of the summer. So are there any rain garden plants that would work in this area that is also partially shaded?
So are these shoreline plantings, or they wouldn't normally be? They're just back near the lake?
They're back near the lake, you know, maybe 20 feet. The garden is there, and yellow iris will grow, and I have a hosta that survived, but I'm not sure it's going to survive after last summer.
No, thank you for that clarification. There are some things that will work in a rain garden that will take wet and dry. I mean, totally submerged is a whole different thing, but let's hope. Who knows what this coming year will bring. But if your hosta survived, it means it must have dried out a little bit at some point. Here are some, one, rain gardens are a good choice. University Extension has some lists, but we've had some great luck with palm sedge and the sedges. Palm sedge will take full sun, but it will tolerate some shade. It's very aggressive. We had it in our rain garden at State Fair Park, and we had to dig it up, and we were giving trunkfuls away to people. And I healed some in just kind of last minute, and 3 years later, I'm like, wow, it's just taken off. And so I put it in an area where I have the water running off my pole barn that stays wet, and it just is thriving in that space. So palm sedge, the leaves kind of come out a weird angle, or other sedges would be a good choice. Turtle head is a late-season bloomer. Our native is white flowering and several feet high. Hot lips is pink, and we've used that one also in our rain garden at State Fair Park, and it's done very well and takes it pretty wet. There are some smaller Joe Pye weeds, little Joe, baby Joe, that will take it wet, and they like moist soil conditions. The straight species gets to be 7 feet tall, 6 feet tall, so if you want something tall, but there are also some shorter ones available as well. New Jersey tea, our native, one of our natives that blooms in white flowers in the summer, is another plant that will take it wet and will take some shade as well. And so there are some good choices out there, and I think it's going to be one of those things, amending your soil if need be, to help hold moisture but increase drainage. So you want that nice balance, right? So you don't have to water your rain garden when a drought hits. And then also then just experimenting to see which ones. You might want to plant a few here and there, do some mulch to help, you know, keep the weeds down. And then as you see what's thriving, just expand on that.
There you go, Linda. Good luck.
Yeah, definitely.
Plants available locally?
Pardon me?
Are these plants available at the local nurseries?
You're in Lake Geneva, there's some good garden centers. There's still quite a few good independent garden centers. We're losing some, but if we all kind of spend some money with them. But I know I've seen these plants locally. In fact, that's where we bought them. For State Fair.
All right. There you go, Linda. Thank you very much for calling. Randy in Spring Green, it's your turn.
Yeah, hi, Larry. I have a question for Melinda about growing strawberries in a pole vertically.
Okay.
How do we keep the top from being dry and the bottom being soaked?
Yes.
I see they do this in, like, Israel, and I live out in Spring Green, a lot of sand, and hence a lot of weeds.
Yeah, I have pure sand too. Yes, and the weeds did great last year, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to do like a PVC pole? Is that what you're talking about, or a bag?
Right, right. PVC pole with a 2-inch hole or 1.5-inch hole, and put the plugs in.
Okay.
But how would I keep the bottom from being saturated and the top being too dry?
Yeah, so one is having drainage or placing that. I'm not sure if you're going to have it hanging or setting on the ground. What are you thinking?
Probably set it in the ground.
I would punch some holes in that so it does drain. So just like you think of it as a container with very limited potting mix. When I've done strawberry pots or whiskey barrels, bigger things, I've usually run PVC down the middle with holes just because I find sometimes what happens is the top gets watered and there's nothing left by the time the moisture gets to the bottom. Now, if you're just doing PVC, that's pretty narrow, and if you use a good quality potting mix, you can kind of monitor that. But as long as you have drainage at the bottom, you may want to put weed barrier if I'm not sure if you're going to you know, close the end and then drill holes in it, somehow a secure screening or weed barrier or something to hold the soil in, but allow the water to drain out. And then you shouldn't have a problem.
Hmm.
But you'll have to monitor to make sure all the plants from top to bottom get watered, because sometimes I see the top ones thriving, but the water doesn't always make it down to the bottom.
Yeah, there you go, Randy. Thank you.
Let us know how it works for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to see your setup.
Appreciate it. You know, I was looking at your schedule of talks and so forth, and you've got one on going vertical, green walls and other vertical gardening techniques.
Well, not this year.
No.
But that's okay. I'm doing small-scale shrubs this year.
Oh, I mean, you know, at Garden Expo, yeah.
Right, at Garden Expo. Today I'm talking small-scale shrubs.
Okay.
Next week at NARI, I'm talking vertical gardens.
That's
sorry.
What
we
I
gave
meant.
You. We gave you way too much information, I think, and it got...
Oh, no, I have February 15th down here as a date.
Okay, so yeah, thank you. So I'm doing vertical gardens at NARI Home and Remodeling Show. So if you need to fix things in your house or your landscape, I'll be there next weekend at State Fair Park. It's a great show. It's another one of those that kind of means spring is on its way. So yeah, I will be talking vertical gardens, everything from the setup, like Randy was asking about, to green walls, to just going vertical with trellises, creative things that we as gardeners always repurpose. So, yeah, I will be doing vertical gardens next weekend. Sorry. I'm confused about where I am and what I'm talking about.
Oh, my gosh. But you are at Garden Expo this weekend, and today you're talking about color?
Right. Small-scale shrubs for season-long color, because a lot of us may not have space. And Diggers Hotline is sponsoring me. That's this evening at 5:15. So if you're working, come by after work. Or if you're not, join all of us.
Join the party.
Yeah, and then Saturday and Sunday, I'm talking season-long color using flowers. A lot of natives. I know so many people are looking at including native plants and looking at those that are going to be easy to put into a garden. I love natives. Some are a little more assertive than others and need a little more space and thinning. So I try to pick some of those that give you some good color and don't take up more than their fair share of the garden space for the most part.
There you go. Melinda Myers, our guest today, nationally known gardening expert. It's always so much fun to have her with us on the Ideas Network. Sasha Van Allen, a producer, Nigel O'Shea, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest Melinda Myers, and we're talking all kinds of plants today on the show. Popular Valentine's Day gift plants, and taking a lot of questions about plants. So I hope you'll join in. Our lines are all filled, but here's the deal. The first 12 people who call will get a pair of tickets for this weekend's Garden and Landscape Expo in Madison. Melinda and I will both be there, and in fact, you're there right now, aren't you, Melinda?
I'm just across the way in a quiet room to talk to you, and then I'm at my booth, and so I hope folks will stop by. Last year, I had such a great time meeting a lot of your fans, Larry, as well as gardeners from all over the state and actually the Midwest. This is a popular show, so hoping a lot of people will stop by to say hello and visit with me.
And I want everybody to stop by at 9:30 Saturday morning for Brian Huddleston and Lisa Johnson and myself as we talk and answer questions. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
No, it always is.
Patrick in Reedsburg has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. I guess it might be a silly question, but my family adopted an orchid about this time last year, and that rascal, I've done the lukewarm water and suspended above the water. And one thing that this guy is doing, the stems look healthy. It looks really vibrant, but the little water reservoir tube that's suspension above the bark line, it seems to be like dying back. It's not that 4-inch long thing. It seems like it's tapering back, and I'm wondering if I've lost it, or if that's something that's normal that occurs with that type of plant. Mm-hmm. So I'm just looking for some foresight.
Is it a phalaenopsis? You know, what type is it?
Oh my gosh! Well, I don't want to put names up.
What do the flowers look like?
They're like a little little butterfly, pinkish,
okay,
white.
Yeah, it sounds like it's moth orchid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so then when you talk about the water reservoir, I guess I'm a little confused. So you're talking about where the leaves come out at the base?
There's that root that circles around the plant that's above the potted line, I guess you would call it. You know,
okay, so the plant's roots that are exploring out beyond.
They're dying
like
back.
One primary, and it's kind of dying back towards, you know, backward.
Backwards,
I guess.
If the leaves look good, the orchids are always putting out new roots. So if I'm picturing this right, which hopefully I am, it sounds like one of the older roots, and sometimes those older roots will die back. I would say if it's dried up or rot, and you might want to cut it, you should be seeing other roots coming out from the plant. If the leaves are looking good, and if you see nice, firm, you should have more roots coming out from the base of the plant. They typically will grow near the soil surface, and then even as they get bigger, reach over the edges of the pot, and it's a good signal it's time to repot. Orchids are epiphytes, so they live they're native to these orchids. These particular ones are epiphytes. They live in the rainforest on trees. They don't parasitize the trees. They just use the roots to anchor and get their moisture from the rainfall and the nutrients from the leaf litter and things. And so one of the challenges, often orchids are sent packed in sphagnum moss to hold the moisture during transit, and then we get them home and it's so easy to overwater them. But it sounds like you're doing a good job, because it sounds like your plant is otherwise healthy. So I would just, if it's dried up and dead or rotten and slimy, I would prune that off. There is a great YouTube video from one of the horticulturists at Chicago Botanic Garden on transplanting orchids. It's one of the best I've seen, and she goes through the process step by step, talks about the different parts of the orchid, talks about potting mixes. You know, it's really good. You might have to just, I can't give you the YouTube name. It's just, I just Googled it as Chicago Botanic Garden transplanting orchids, and I got there. But that might be helpful for you too, because she goes through the parts of the plant, and that might be, if I'm visualizing the wrong thing, Patrick, it might help you.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to make sure I'm answering you correctly, that what I'm seeing in my head is what you're describing.
I know. I'm struggling to describe it.
I hear you. It's always tough over the phone. I totally hear you.
We're doing well.
Yeah. So I think you're doing okay. I think that's just a root that maybe got injured or, you know.
Yeah, just got old.
Yeah, just old. Exactly. So I think you're actually doing well.
All right.
Like,
thanks, Patrick. Appreciate it.
I'll check that out. Thank you.
Okay, you bet.
Well, Beth in Fitchburg, it's your turn. Hi, Beth.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I had a question about vertical gardening. I've got access to some loading pallets, and I know you can do some things with vertical gardening with them, but I have never tried it. I want to see if Melinda has some suggestions.
Yeah, so reusing pallets, one thing that if you're doing edibles, make sure they're heat treated, and there should be a mark on there that tells you some pallets have been treated with chemicals. So if you're doing food gardening, you don't want to do that. What you'll want to do is you'll need to figure out how to hold the soil in. So some people will line the pallets, and I've done this with landscape fabric, and then cut slices in between the, you know, maybe removing some of the slats if need be, and then potting in between those, and that landscape fabric holds it in. Some people disassemble the whole thing and reassemble it. So that's a lot more work than I've done. I'll just admit, I've seen it. They're beautiful, but and then with vertical gardening, especially when you're doing things like pallets or the PVC like Randy mentioned, or even those systems you can buy, think of it as a container garden on end with very limited potting mix. And so you really need to make a commitment to water. We did one year at State Fair somebody had recommended using a shoe caddy for planting herbs, and I've done that, but it's a very small amount of potting mix, and we mounted it up in June when we planted the garden, and everybody's going, oh, it's beautiful, and I'm like, who's going to water this every day twice a day?
Yeah.
And everybody looked at the ground, so I had to take it home with me, and I said, we're never doing this again. You know, it's a great idea. It's wonderful if you're home and you can water twice a day or use some of the drip irrigation systems. And a lot of the new vertical systems, they're really trying to build in some of those features to make it easier to be successful. Or the DIYers, you know, creative gardeners are doing it themselves. So just keep watering in mind. How are you going to hold the soil intact? Fabric, that landscape fabric works well. That is a good use for it. A well-drained potting mix, how are you going to get the plants in? And make sure you can keep that soil watered from top to bottom.
There you go, Beth. Couple of things to think about there. Thank you so much for calling. Patrick in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Patrick.
Hello. A couple of summers ago, I planted a semi-native and native garden with grasses and native flowers. And one of the non-natives I planted was a fox red curly sedge.
Oh, okay.
And I know you're supposed to trim back the grasses in summer so they have a better chance to grow, but I didn't do that for the sedge because I didn't know if that was appropriate or not. And during the summer, it was hard to tell that it was even alive because I don't know.
It's brown. It looks dead when you buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a dark red plant and it kind of looks like it's dead already. Some people have told me. But I didn't cut anything off, and sort of during the summer, I was pulling out, like, mushy, dead stuff, and I didn't know if it was going to come back, but it seems like it's still alive now, so I don't know.
Yeah,
put that back or just leave it?
Okay, so a couple things. I like to leave my ornamental grasses stand for winter, great habitat for a lot of beneficial insects. It helps hold the soil in place. Many have seeds the birds like. And I'm assuming when you're talking about cutting them back in late spring is the time often, so the sun gets there, mowing them down. The red fox curly sedge I find it not reliably hardy in our area. It's, I think, rated zone 5. But I do find sometimes it doesn't quite make it, especially if the soil, you know, they're tougher native sedges or other sedges that are ornamental that are a little tougher than that. I had a gardener that grew toffee twist, and it's an annual, and she said she left it in her garden the second year because it looked the same as it did the first year. And by the next year, it was rotten, and she had to remove it. So I'm not trying to make light because it's always disappointing when you think it's going to come back. But I'm not surprised. It's not really, I just find it's not as reliably hardy for us as it should be or we think it will be. So if it's, I just wait and see if anything sprouts. If it's rotten and mushy, it's time to get it out and put something else in.
There you go, Patrick. Thank you so much. Kathleen in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Kathleen.
Thank you so much, Melinda and Larry. Last year, I bought a hyacinth bulb in a little vase at a grocery store and enjoyed it and then kind of forgot about it, so it dried up. And then all of a sudden, I recently saw it sprouting again, so I quick cleaned up the vase and I put fresh water in it, and it's even got a side bulb, so I'm going to get two sprouts out of it. And I bought another one this year, and I'm just wondering, what are the pros and cons of thinking of moving those into pots? Or just leaving them as they are and neglecting them like I did? What's the best way to maintain so they come back? Maybe I'm just lucky with the one from last year.
Did you get flowers or just leaves?
The one this year did come with some buds.
Right.
So I got three lovely stalks. The one from last year, I just checked it, and the older bulb has a bloom stalk that's coming up.
Oh, man.
You know what? There are a lot of people very discouraged or like, oh, didn't do it for me. So here's the deal. And I always tell gardeners, I can tell you kind of how you can increase your success, but we're gardeners and I'm a gardener too. So I always like to push my luck and see what happens. So I've had luck with my forced hyacinth bulbs in soil reblooming. I usually put them out in the summer somewhere where I can't see them so they get some good sunlight and the leaves, you know, put the energy back in. Throw them in a place that's cool, sometimes my unheated garage. Hyacinths typically need a chill. That yours may be the exception, and typically need a chill of 12 to 15 weeks to get them to bloom. So I'm glad you brought this up because spring flowering bulbs are another popular Valentine's Day gift. Mm-hmm. Great to brighten your house this time of year. After they're done blooming, I like to leave them grow, cut the flower stem off, leave them grow. I put them in a sunny window, fertilize if need be. You could add a little liquid fertilizer to that water that if yours was in a water vase. And then, you know, when they go dormant, either plant them in the garden if you want them in your garden or store them in a cool, dark place for the summer so that they don't shrivel up and die. Pot them up or stick them in peat moss in a spare refrigerator or your unheated garage to give them that chill and try again. I think part of the fun of gardening, Kathleen, is exactly what you're doing. Don't give up. You may be surprised. And if it doesn't work, there's always the compost pile.
There is always the compost pile.
So good job. Thanks for sharing that story.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathleen. Thank you. John in Toma, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, I had a question for your guest about a native Wisconsin carnivorous plant that lives near like water's edges, swampy areas. I was on a tour at the Meadow Valley Wildlife Area checking out the whooping cranes one time, and the tour guide pointed them out to us. They grow like right along the water's edge. I think they had like a reddish stem possibly and maybe a reddish leaf possibly to attract mosquitoes, but they eat mosquitoes and small insects, and they grow right along the water's edge. And I just wondering if they were transplantable and if it was legal to do that.
Right. Good questions. Really good questions. No, if they're public areas, not. If it's a private area, I'm not sure how. It sounds like pitcher plants that you're describing.
Yeah.
Sundews are the others. There are some nurseries that do carry wetland plants. Is it Windy Oaks down in Eagle, I think, is somebody who sells wetland plants. You might want to check with a local nature center in your area that may have a connection. But those are really cool plants. And your best bet would be if you could find a nursery that has them and then adding them to your garden that way. One of the things, I'm doing some work with the aquatic invasive species, the folks at UW Extension and DNR, trying to get the word out to go to quality nurseries. And I know you're thinking of that, John, and not bringing in invasives. There are people that are illegally selling invasive plants online, you know, through eBay and things like that. I do have some information at my booth, and I know the folks from DNR will be also at another booth for those folks. We're just trying to get people to preserve things, John, like you saw, because those are the coolest plants, and not bring in invasives accidentally. It's usually accidental. So I would try, I think it's Windy Oaks down in Eagle. I'm not sure if she has these. If you've got a nature center nearby, that's another option too. And if that doesn't work, drop me a note. Be very patient. I know I'm behind on my correspondence at info@melindamyers.com. And I'll see if I can help you find some sources.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. I think we still have a few pairs of tickets if you want to the Garden and Landscape Expo. If you want to go or you're planning to go, or maybe if you weren't and you think, well,
good opportunity.
Yeah, good opportunity. Give a call 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well, email at ideas@wpr.org. Mike in Madison up next. Hi, Mike.
Well, hi. I had a question, and then I also had a comment for Valentine's Day. The question was, what's the best week to put tomato seeds into your window that has sunshine?
Yeah.
To get it out into the garden by the
proper time. Yeah.
Yeah, and boy, last year we all got a late start. If we didn't, your plants just sat there waiting for it to warm up. But one of the good things when I was an extension agent, a lot of the planting recommendations were changing because we found we used to plant earlier. We'd have these long, spindly transplants that took longer to recover. And usually early April is the time we want to put our tomatoes and peppers and eggplants, start them indoors, so that they're ready to put outside as well. So there's a great publication at the Learning Store. I used to know the number by heart. It's Vegetable Cultivars and Planting Guide. And what's nice is they give you a starting time indoors and outdoors. At the bottom, it says if you're in southeast Wisconsin, you delay it by a week. If you're up north, you delay it by 2 weeks because, you know, the temperatures are going to vary depending on where you're located in the state. And that's a really handy guide. And it gives, you know, you may look at it and go, well, I always started earlier. But we found those smaller transplants adjust quicker and they recover faster than those long, spindly ones. It's just hard to grow a good tomato plant even if you've got a nice sunny window and under artificial lights, too.
Yeah, it's always tempting to get going early.
It is. It is. It truly is. We're all dying to get out there. Microgreens are a good option. You could eat them, plant them. They're ready to harvest in 10 days to get your little fix.
There you go. And, Mike, it's if you just type in UW Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store, that's going to pop up, and you'll be able to.
On Valentine's Day, I used to always have a heart-shaped ivy that I used to like to have my wife when we were on the lake, but I forgot all about it. I'm thinking about picking up one of those.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great idea. And if you, you know, if you have an avid gardener, give them all the makings, a pot, a frame to do the topiary, and a young plant to train so they can train it. And if you got someone that likes the finished product, that's a great idea. Those topiaries with the ivies and the wire vines are excellent. Thank you. That's a great suggestion, Mike.
Great idea, Mike. Thank you so much for calling. Melinda Myers, our guest, a nationally known gardening expert. She's authored 20 gardening books. You can find her website at melindamyers.com. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you listening in today as we visit with Melinda Myers. Melinda is going to be a really busy gal this weekend. You're going to be all over the place at the Garden and Landscape Expo in Madison.
You bet. I'm speaking every day, 5:15 tonight, noon tomorrow, and 12:45 on Sunday. And then I'm in booth 736 to answer questions. I had such a great time last year. They invited me back, and I got to meet so many gardeners. You know, Larry, that's what makes our day, right? When we get to chat with gardeners who share, I think, as many ideas for me to pass along as I try to share with them. So it's always a lot of fun, and I've got lots of goodies, educational information to help you in your garden, and some butterfly weed from the Grow Smart program, American Transmission Company. I have packets of our butterfly weed, the milkweed, great for our pollinators, our monarchs in particular, so some seeds for your garden. And Digger's Hotline, we want to remind you to call. You know, as you're planning your project, we often overlook calling before you dig, you know, even when you're doing a flower bed. And there's nothing. I was at a training session the other day, and this guy was saying, you know, somebody came and they didn't call and they hit the phone line and they said it was in the wrong place. Well, they didn't call to get it marked, you know, before they did the work. So always call. It's for your safety, you know, and your pocketbook as well.
Yeah. And I'm always surprised. I've had them come out more than once and they're always quick to do it. I mean, it's fast.
You're right. Within, you need to give them 3 business days.
Yeah.
It's free. You call 811 or, you know, register online, file online at diggershotline.com. And it's free and easy. And, you know, you think you know where things are. You go, oh, I'm not digging really deep. And then you hit a cable line or a phone line, and worse yet, something more dangerous. So you're right, they're fast, it's free. You know, it's just a good idea to get them out there so you know what you're doing.
And I'll be around tomorrow morning at 9:30. Actually, I'll get there early. One of the fun things about doing the little talk on in the morning is a chance before we even talk to just visit with people about the show, this show, and other things relating to public radio, and just how are they doing, kind of thing. It's always a lot of fun. So I like to get there early so I can talk to the early arrivals.
You bet. And I bet the front row fills up fast.
It's at that place seats, I think, 400. So it's usually full. So it's kind of fun. Well, Dick in Cumberland has a question. So let's go there. Hi, Dick.
Hi, Larry and Melinda. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a pond behind my house with that southern exposure, about a 30-degree slope. The soil's not the best. And what I'm trying to do instead of mowing it now, as I get a little bit older, I want to reclaim that with wild plants that are eco-friendly. I want a lot of bees, a lot of butterflies, et cetera. And kind of so I'm looking for a site to find information on those plants and where to purchase them. And then secondly, I planted some caterpillar plant, the
milkweed?
Yes, the milkweed. I planted a bunch of seeds that I got on the internet down by the edge of the pond, and they never took off. I put about 150 in. I didn't get one plant coming up. I wonder what I did wrong. So kind of a two-pronged question.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for planting for the butterflies. Milkweed, I always find it's more successful when it plants itself, right, than when I try to plant it. So you're not alone. There's been such a movement on planting milkweed for monarchs that it's hard to find transplants, too, so that makes it challenging and how those seeds are managed. I would watch if there's any in the area. Chances are some will be coming up. I harvested some from mine. I'm trying to put it in a certain place, you know, where I can really just let it go crazy. And giving it that chill, harvesting, cleaning it in the fall, storing it in a cool place, doing some winter sowing with it to try to get it to grow. You might want to try Prairie Nursery. Neil DeBull is a frequent guest on Larry's show. What I like about his website, obviously he has quality plant material and seeds, but he's got great information. He's got collections of plants. He talks about these are good for sun in sandy soil. These are good for sun in loamy soil. These are good for sun in heavy clay and for shade. So he really gives you mixes and ideas and information about the plants. So you can tell, so you can order individually the seed mixes or the plants or mix them up. He also talks about soil prep, which is so important. One of the things I like to recommend on a slope is you want to hold that soil intact, and it depends on how you feel about a total vegetation killer, but you may want to try to kill the grass and weeds, make sure they're dead, but leave them intact to hold the soil in place, and then plant if you're going to do seeds or plants in that dead turf, so to speak, so that it holds the soil in place, it helps suppress weeds, it holds the moisture down, so you don't have all your seeds washed down to the bottom of the hill. But Prairie Nursery is a good place to start. You might want to, again, try with seeds. He has a variety, a natural occurring variety he sells called Solivantii, which I found out was found in Ohio, actually, but it was a naturally occurring variety, a little less aggressive than common milkweed. Common milkweed, you can cut the seed pods off to prevent it from reseeding, which doesn't sound like you need to do, but those rhizomes can be aggressive. So folks out there that are like, oh, I don't know that I want common milkweed taking over, you might want to check out that natural variety. It's not a cultivar, but a variety. A little less aggressive, still appealing to monarchs.
Yeah, there you go, Dick. Thank you so much for calling. Mark in Beaver Dam, we'll go to you next. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Larry. I have a question about asparagus. I have a bed of asparagus that I've had in for about 15 years. About 7 years ago, it really started to give me fruit, great
step right.
And now it doesn't. It just has really cut way back.
So a couple things. Keeping asparagus weeded is a challenge. I'm fighting quack grass. And so keeping the weeds down, because they really rob a lot of moisture and nutrients from the asparagus. Don't do the salt thing. That can impede, not that you are, but others out there might be going, oh, I salt the earth and that takes care of my weeds, but it also reduces production of your asparagus. If you haven't fertilized, spring fertilization, whether it's compost or a low nitrogen slow release fertilizer, of course, you know, I'd recommend Milorganite, what I use on mine, but whatever you're comfortable with in the spring to give it a little bit of a boost. Have you noticed asparagus beetles at all feeding? Are the stems distorted?
No, what I noticed last year was the Japanese beetles were all over the fronds.
Okay.
When they came up.
Yeah, and usually, Yeah, what I would suggest is if the asparagus beetles feed along the stems and they can cause twisting and distortion, and we usually leave the asparagus stand for winter, but if you've had problems with the asparagus beetle, clean up in the fall is a good idea and get rid of it. Have you fertilized recently?
Not recently. Now, when you're talking about curling and thing, I cut the asparagus down in the fall all the way.
Okay.
Should I not do that? Should I leave it all up?
The benefit of leaving it up is it captures snow when we have it. It insulates the soil. You know, if you've got good snow cover, not a problem. It's just one of those things that just is like added benefit, you know, gives you that little edge. You know, the fact that it was doing great and is just declining over time makes me wonder, you might want to get a soil test.
Yeah.
And start there, because that can give you a good clue. Maybe it's a deficiency more than just giving it a low nitrogen slow release fertilizer. There might be some kind of deficiency, and that can help you increase productivity. They're pretty drought tolerant. It's been very wet, so if that area stays really wet, you might be getting some decline due to some of those roots rotting out, you know, because asparagus likes well-drained soil, and it's been pretty wet around here the last few years. So I would do a soil test. I would, you know, kind of dig down a little bit in the soil as things are coming up, not right by the plant, but sees that it's staying wet, you know, especially where things are dying off or declining. And then consider if you don't have asparagus beetle, leaving it stand for winter just for added insulation.
Good points. Thank you, Mark, for calling. Dick in Lone Rock has an asparagus question, I believe, as well. Let's go there. Dick, hello.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Long time, first time. Enjoy the show. And I have planted asparagus seed last spring and transplanted the seedlings out into the garden this fall. I had last fall I had to move them, so I put them in pots and just put them on the front, the south-facing porch, and they're still growing. Should I... Do they need stratification, or can I just keep them going and plant them in the spring?
So they're inside?
Yes.
Okay. If they're green and they're growing, you're not going to be harvesting this spring anyway. And typically why we like them to go dormant is so that bringing them inside, it's hard to keep them alive. The light intensity is not as great. The humidity is low. But it sounds like you've got the perfect spot. If they're green and growing, you know, you're going to want to wait till the danger frost is past. Or when you put them out, protect them. Just because you've got the greens and the stems actively growing, they're not coming up like our asparagus spears are coming up with the weather. Yours are more of in a tropical environment. You know, asparagus grows throughout much of the country, even in areas that don't get cold winters like ours. So I think at this point, just keep it growing as long as you can. If it does start to die back, put it in a cool, dark place. Even an unheated garage works great. But they're actively growing, so you'll either need to... I would just keep them doing that. Spring is not that far away, hopefully.
Yeah, there you go, Dick. Thank you so
much
for calling.
Good luck with
that. Yeah, good luck. Florin emailed to ask if winterberry is an invasive plant. He'd like to grow winterberry for the birds.
Winterberry is not. It's actually native. They sometimes call it Michigan holly. You'll need a male, for at least one male for every five females. It's a wonderful plant. It's one of them I'm going to talk about today. It likes slightly acidic soil, moist soil too. so it'll take it a little damp. Can you be used in a rain garden? So those of us with alkaline soil struggle a bit, but it's a wonderful plant. Sparkle is one of them. Sparkleberry is one of them. Just make sure you get at least one male if you want the berries for the birds and you to enjoy. Green Bay Botanic Garden has some really nice plantings of it. I'm embarrassed to say I haven't checked with what's here at Old Brook, but wonderful plant, native, not invasive.
And Jason emailed to ask how to successfully separate hostas.
You know, hostas are really very tough plants. The ones that get really expensive, you're always nervous just because you paid so much. I like to either lift them just as they're coming out of the ground in spring, and then I dig up the whole clump. I like to use a linoleum knife. Somebody recommended a drywall saw to me for dividing, and pull them apart, and then just, you know, divide them in half or fourths, depending on how big a clump you want to start with. And the other time to do it is late summer, you know, lifting it again, dividing it, and giving it time that September, October, when the soil's warm and the air's cool, it adjusts really well for that. I've done it anytime during the growing season and kind of abused them, but the ones I spent more money on, I was a lot more careful with.
They are. I mean, it's hard to kill them.
It is hard to kill them. They are pretty tough. You are right.
Oh, man. And can you quickly explain the difference between petunias and super petunias?
I think the super petunias are actually, and this is a trademark thing, and I'm trying to remember, super petunias are calibrachoas, just another name for calibrachoas. So when you're looking at the tag, there are the petunias, there are some of the multifloras. The calibrachoas are a relative but different, and they like it dry and sunny and warm, not as tolerant of cooler and wetter conditions like the petunias. And then there's the pet calli or calipets, which are crosses between petunias and the calibrachoas that are a little bit bigger flower, free-flowering like the calibrachoas, but a little bit bigger like the petunias. So check the super petunias. I always have to remember if those are the ones that are calibrachoas, and it's a trademark name. So check the tag for the botanical name.
It's always a pleasure, Melinda. Thank you so much, and we'll see you this weekend.
That sounds great, Larry. Thanks so much for having me.
Melinda Myers. Go to melindamyers.com and check her out, or check her out at in person at the Garden and Landscape Expo this weekend. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network.